Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, and there you can listen to the show anytime you want to, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking about the Life Link, which is center here in Santa Fe that's doing a lot of good things. And we're also going to be talking about the Eyes of Africa initiative to cure and treat blindness in Africa. Right now, I would like to welcome Gail Snyder. She is the editor and publisher of Santa Fe's newest literary magazine, Not Drowning, Waving. We're also joined by Elisa Keir, who's the art director and webmaster, and Zoe Dwyer, who's a contributor and will be art director starting with the second issue. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Hello.
Good morning.
Gail, this is your brainchild, Not Drowning, Waving. That's an unusual title.
Yeah, it came from a Stevie Smith poem. She's a English poet, and I guess she wrote this poem in the 40s, and it basically was about despair and giving up and swimming out to the middle of the ocean and drowning, not waving.
And so you turned it around.
So I turned it around. Because I just was in horrible traffic trying to get here. I've never seen traffic like that in Santa Fe.
And we've been told it doesn't exist.
I know. It's supposed to be a traffic minute. Well, it's not. And I just feel like things are getting weirder and weirder, and we need to not give up. We need to remember our sense of humor and that we have creativity galore.
And so this is, I guess, not exactly a new incarnation of your previous literary magazine, Are We There Yet? But you published Are We There Yet, which I loved back in the 90s. How is this similar and different?
Oh, it's similar. A lot of the people who are writing for it are similar, and lots more people have come into my life since then, so including these two wonderful women sitting next to me, these artists. That's how it's different. It's different because it's beautiful. It's so well, it's an art piece, and thanks to their help, they hand put it together, mostly Elisa for this issue, and Zoe is going to take over from there. And I think that when I was doing Are We There Yet, I was impatient. I was thinking about that in the car on my way here, being impatient in the traffic, and I was thinking about how in the 90s I just wanted us to get through. It felt like we had to get through something. And now I really feel that we get to savor where we are and enjoy it and laugh, but also just be with each other in a community. I feel it's very important to emphasize the sense of community that maybe is starting to be lacking a little bit in Santa Fe, and regurgitate it. No, that's not the right word. Rejuvenate
it. I don't think it is.
Baby bird style. To feed the young.
Right.
So each issue that you've done in the past and that you're doing now revolves around a theme.
A theme, yeah. The first theme is tribe. Because I think the first thing we need to do is figure out who's in our tribe, who our friends are, who we're working with, who we're playing with. And from there, the next issue is going to focus on ceremony. So everything in the magazine has to do with whatever the theme for that issue is. And everyone takes a kind of a journey in their art or their writing and works from toward that theme.
So, did you, Zoe, participate in the first issue about tribe?
I did indeed. I've got a photograph and a poem in the first issue, and Elisa and Gail and I got together multiple times to talk about the magazine and the creation of the whole thing and discussed the theme of tribe and how large we wanted that to be. You know, not, like you said, you know, finding the tribe, but also, I think, looking out for the tribe in unusual places and trying to put it out there to as many people as possible.
Yeah, and I think your photograph, I wish we could show them your photograph, but can you describe it? It's such a great tribe. It shows tribe.
Well, it's a photograph of a bunch of little creatures sitting on a couch in my mother's house in Minneapolis. She makes these sock monsters, what she calls them. They're kind of like sock monkeys, but they're monstrous. They're not quite sock monkeys. So there's this whole huge group of them nestled on a couch that I took a photograph of.
And they're all looking different directions, and they kind of have a raspy expression on their faces. But they're all together.
It's odd how these inanimate objects each have a very distinctive personality.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a black and white photograph. The cover of the magazine is in color, and the interior images are all in black and white. So I think Elisa did a fabulous job selecting images that come through vividly to complement the text, and the text and the image heighten each other.
Well, the art direction of it, I mean, the look of it is so, it seems like so pre-internet, almost pre-computer.
Yeah, I was influenced by doing punk zines in the 80s and 90s.
That's what it looks like.
Although I did do a lot of computer work in there, but I tried to keep it hidden and a little bit more vintage looking.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Of course, the computer, the whole thing was designed to make everything look more slick, but this has that feeling of sort of pieces torn out of newspapers and
right.
glued down with a glue stick and then Xeroxed.
Yeah, if anything, I actually manipulated stuff in Photoshop a bit and Illustrator, but just tried to make it look old and worn and coffee stained.
Yeah, and she used things like fabric along the sides of some of the pieces. I love how she designed each thing. She made it its own separate art piece. So everybody who wrote for this, when they open the magazine, they're going to be blown away by how incredibly it's laid out.
Each page is a collage, but the whole is a whole.
Yeah.
That's what I tried to do.
And you succeeded.
Thank you.
And so we're talking about the new literary magazine, Not Drowning, Waving, and the subtitle is Spearheading Our Evolutionary Leap. What do you mean by that?
I knew you were going to ask me that. Well, it seems like we're at a pretty exciting place in history right now, and I think that we could kind of crash and burn, or we could jump into a whole new level and be our best selves, and that's what I'd like to encourage us all to do with this magazine, through this magazine.
And what is the role of thinking about ourselves tribally in making an evolutionary leap?
Well, you can't do it by yourself, and I think you would, if you were in my tribe, which you are, Mary Charlotte, then you would know something that I don't, and I would know something that you don't, and together we would, you know, combine those things, and we'd get somewhere different. So we need each other. That's the point of tribe.
That's the lovely thing, too, about a whole group of artists and writers producing work on the same theme, but doing it individually and then putting it together and see where the cross currents are.
Yeah, I'm glad you're saying that, because it's amazing what we got, all on this same subject of tribe.
Very different voices.
Yeah.
So what is the process by which you and the writers that you work with come up with material? One of the things that I noticed in your statement somewhere was that you don't want people to submit things they've already written, but instead to think about the theme and come up with new material for the magazine.
Yeah. I've had experience before when we were doing readings where people would say, oh, I have something that would probably fit into that theme, and it doesn't. Very rarely, anyway. Mostly, what I want from people is for them to think about, I want them to get obsessed about the theme and take a journey with the theme and live with it every day and have breakfast with it and dream about it and just go there all the time and make everything relate to that they overhear during the day or see. And as a result, write something or paint something or photograph something from that unknown place and come back with something that they didn't know or have before they did it and share that in the magazine with the rest of us.
So do you do this actually in groups in somebody's living room or?
We have in readings for readings we have, and we probably will again. At this point I just email people a little coaching document and then they brainstorm with themselves and then they submit.
And this is also for visual artists as
yeah.
well, equally.
Interesting. Now, did you put any of your own, besides laying out the whole magazine and doing the artwork, did you put some of your own art in it?
I did. I took a little page in here.
Yeah. Yeah, describe your page.
It's hard to describe, but it's a tribe of, it's called the Bio Network Tribe, and it just delves just slightly into it, but it's a fictitious science fiction tribe that's out to save the world and replant our soils.
With hope.
Yeah. What are some of the other tribes that you all came up with?
Failed superheroes.
Ah, yes.
That was Zoe's particular poem. I love your poem.
Can you say more about that?
Sure. Yeah, I read a news story. Excuse me. Read a news story about Hollywood Boulevard out-of-work superheroes fighting for turf. Men and women, sounded like mostly men, would camp out on various street corners and, you know, kind of do some antics for the crowd and just appear in costume and entertain people. And fighting for turf, you know, fighting for their little spot, almost like hookers, you know, get off my corner. And so I found something so utterly tragic in that, and also humorous, that I had to use it as the basis for a poem. So, and then the tribe, the separate tribe of the failed superheroes, you know, being somehow cut off from the life, the conventional lifestyle of the people who are watching them.
And superheroes are supposed to save the day.
Right. And if you can't save the day, if you can't even hold on to your corner and make a couple bucks for a sandwich, it's rough.
Now, are you doing readings in conjunction with this new magazine?
Yeah, we're going to. I was hoping to. This is the first issue that's just come out, and I was hoping to have a reading to sort of launch this one. But I've been trying to do too many things, and I'm in that horrible cycle where you're running late from one thing to the next, and I'm changing that now. But anyway, because of that, we didn't have time. I just got overwhelmed by everything, and trying to set up something to do separately here in Santa Fe, and then one in Madrid, and one possibly in Albuquerque too, it just felt like way too much to try to do. So we're gonna just quietly sell these tribe issues in bookstores, independent bookstores, and maybe also Borders. And other places around Santa Fe, and in shops all over Madrid, and then I'll take on Albuquerque after that. The next issue is ceremony. That's the theme for the next ceremony, the next issue. And we will either do a reading on ceremony or
you'll have
next,
a ceremony
or the next theme, right?
Zoe is nodding sagely.
Yes, we will have a ceremony.
It will have to be a funny ceremony.
It'll be a fun ritualistic event.
Now, do people have to, how do people submit or get involved in this? Is this open to the outside, or how does it work?
Yeah. Well, you either email or write to me. And
all the information's on our website.
Which is?
Yes, thank you, Lisa.
The website's www.notdrowningwaving-themag.com.
Okay, not drowning. I bet if you Google it, it'll come right up as well.
Yeah, it does.
It's funny, you've been working with a lot of the same people over the years. What is that like? Have you seen their work take an evolutionary leap?
Have you seen
your own?
Yeah, all of us, I have. I've seen people like Eve Tulpa. She's one of my favorite writers in Santa Fe. She was in a reading that we did, I don't know, maybe a couple of years ago, and she just took this risk. She started writing about something that wasn't cute and wasn't funny and wasn't quirky and endearing and, you know, all these things that she usually kind of relies on, and it was amazing. I cried when she got up and read it, and I've seen that happen with lots of people. That's the thing about art, any art, I think, that is the point of doing something like this, to say that we're spearheading the evolutionary leap of humanity probably sounds kind of pretentious and also impossible. But I don't really think it is. I think we all have within us...
Why not give it a try?
This incredible creativity. And we just need each other's encouragement to let it come to the fore. And so I have seen lots of people's art evolve, and my own too, and it's exciting. It kind of makes me feel like I wish we had more than one lifetime to cram all this into.
Maybe we do.
I think we actually do, but...
Do we get the same libraries in the next life, though?
Not clear. We don't really know. How do you fund this and keep it running?
Well, that's a good question. It's so far, it's kind of limping. It has advertisers, and it needs many more advertisers, and it needs subscribers. And if you subscribe, you get this delivered in your mailbox, and with a little note inside from me and or Lisa and Zoe. And it also needs just sponsors. Anybody who wants to sponsor what we're doing, anybody who believes in what we're doing and just has a little extra cash can send it along and see it grow and become something much bigger.
And get involved with it themselves.
And get involved with it themselves, please. We always say join us in any place that we can.
You have quite a number of advertisers as well.
Yeah. Advertisers are basically how we got this issue out, and we need advertisers.
I trust too that once people see this issue and see how beautifully it's put together and the quality of the art and writing in it, that we'll get a lot of subscriptions.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's true, because it was hard for the ad reps going around trying to solicit people when there was no magazine to show for what this was going to be, and now there is.
Now, there's a significant Madrid influence in this paper. You live in Madrid, and there's also some other contributors from there. What is... I mean, Madrid is, like, speaking of tribes, it's a whole other subculture.
Uh-huh. Madrid is also evolving. Madrid has been kind of a rough, wild child, and it still is, but it's evolving also into sort of a self-confidence in its own creativity, I think. And so because I live there, and it's small, it's a community that I know, and I'm trying to encourage community out in the wider world. So the influence in the magazine of Madrid is deliberate. I just feel that we should take any community that we do know and do have and try to celebrate that in order to see how to get past all this kind of wasteland existence that we're in without community.
Are you, Lisa, are you a Madrid person as well?
Yes, I've lived there for 7 years now.
What is it like there compared to Santa Fe? What is your experience of living in that place?
I love it. I feel like I can wear my pajamas downtown and people will be happy for me. And yet at the same time, they'll let me grow and mature and change and metamorphose and not hold me to where I was in the past. So it's very, very supportive and nice and quiet with a big Milky Way.
She can dress up as a bear and do cabaret.
That's she can dress up as a bear in pajamas.
That too.
Yeah, we just had a cabaret show recently.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And Elisa was not dressed as a bear, I mean, with pajamas, but she was dressed as a bear.
Yes. That's a whole other story.
You are the webmaster of this magazine.
Uh-huh.
To what extent are people actually reading magazines on the web these days as opposed to papers? Do you have any sense of that?
I think they're starting to read them online more and more. I personally would like to get this at least some pages, at least, so people can get more of a sense of what's there up. And if anything, eventually have it in PDF file online that maybe you could subscribe to.
And if you do that, would you still maintain the look of it, which is so much about paper and fabric and scissors and so on?
That would be very challenging, but I think it's possible. You would just have to present it.
Would you even want to do that on the web?
I'd be interested in it, just so some other people could have access to it, because at this point we can only distribute, you know, about 500 copies, so I'd be interested in it. But yeah, tactile, this magazine's very tactile. That'd be hard to pull off online.
Yeah, it's that kind of old-time book feeling, you mm-hmm. know, when books were pieces of art, and they were handmade, and it has that feeling.
We're talking about the new literary magazine, Not Drowning, Waving, Spearheading Our Evolutionary Leap, published by Gail Snyder, and edited by Gail Snyder. We're also joined by Elisa Keir and Zoe Dwyer. Where can people get this?
They can get it at Collected Works and other independent bookstores. They can get it at Borders. They can get it at several galleries in Madrid, including Rock Paper, and eventually they can get it in Albuquerque. And if they go online to our website, which is www.notdrowningwaving-themag.com, they can see specifically all the places to
and
buy it.
Zoe, before we go, you're a poet. Are you reading anytime soon?
Well, the first Monday of every month at PD Bean, I'm still hosting Open Poetry, which I've been doing for about 5 years. So I do that every month. Also do Poets for Peace reading on the plaza the first Tuesday of every month at noon. So every month I have at least two readings. Just did one back in September, a big one. So I don't have another big one planned yet, but be working on it. Thanks for asking. But Open Poetry, first Monday of every month, 7 o'clock, P.D. Bean, open to everybody.
And where is this?
P.D. Bean is on Cerrillos Road, right near India House and Auto Zone. It's where Lamplighter Liquors used to be, and it still has that great lightning bolt arrow neon sign. It's actually a really great venue to read in.
You know, you just can't get through a month without somebody giving you directions in Santa Fe saying, this is where such and such used to be.
It used to drive me crazy when my mom did that.
Zoe Dwyer, Elisa Keir, and Gail Snyder, thank you very much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you all.
And once again, Not Drowning, Waving is available at Collected Works Bookstore, Garcia Street also?
I think so.
And other local venues.
Down, yeah.
And you can certainly find them on the web at notdrowningwaving-themag. We're going to take a little break right now. The time is coming up to 8:30 on KSFR. We'll be right back. I would like now to welcome Dr. Daniel Rennell. He is involved in a project called the Eyes of Africa Initiative that is having a fundraising effort to cure and prevent blindness in Africa. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks. Hi, Mary Charlotte.
Nice to have you. Now, this is a subject that we're having you on because it's something I'd never even heard about, which is the fact that blindness on the continent of Africa is far more common and happens far earlier than it does in developed countries.
Absolutely. It affects young children and young people, and so the amount of productivity lost is enormous. In the United States, we think about cataract diseases.
Not to mention just the life. I mean,
right.
Productivity, but human beings who can't see.
Of course, they can't enjoy their lives. They can't be with their families and their, you know, siblings. In the United States, you think about cataracts as being an elderly disease, but in Africa, it's really more in the young.
Now, this is always cataracts that we're talking about?
What we're talking about now for this project is cataracts because it's so easy to cure it. A 20-minute operation costs $25, and they're cured. And so this initiative is geared specifically at eliminating cataract disease from Africa.
Now, why are so many young people getting cataracts?
It has to do with malnutrition. It has to do with vitamin A deficiency specifically. There are also some infections that can cause cataracts.
And how is it that when my mother has cataracts, she goes in for a very, very expensive surgery, and when in Africa costs $25?
That's a very good question. It has a lot to do with the health care in the United States. And
is it the same operation?
It's the same operation.
You're kidding.
It's the same operation. It's just done much more efficiently and quicker there. And you don't have to worry about lawyers and other things like that.
So you are involved in. Have you actually yourself been to Africa and been doing this cataract surgery?
I have not. I'm not the surgeon who does the cataract disease. I just help support them by raising money for a center in Africa that's going to teach the local physicians in Africa to do the cataract surgery. That's called sustainable relief, and that's much more effective than just sending Americans over there to do cataract surgery for a week and then coming back home.
What about prevention? I mean, you talk about infections and malnutrition and so on. Is that kind of education part of this initiative as well?
Absolutely. These centers that we're building in Africa, and also we're trying to build them in Tibet, will teach education about malnutrition and prevention of infections and prevention of eye disease.
So what kind of, I mean, when we think about cataracts here, you think about wearing sunglasses. You think about preventing all that UV radiation from going into the lenses of your eyes.
True. That's part of the same education that's going to have to happen all over the world. But on a fundamental issue in the developing countries, what's much more important is education about malnutrition and specifically vitamin A deficiency and other essential minerals that people need to include in their diet to avoid the cataracts.
In terms of the places you're looking at, education about malnutrition is one thing, but actual availability of food may not be there.
Correct. And that is a very large geopolitical issue that, you know, has many hurdles that have to be overcome by the developing countries and the relief agencies. But any kind of sustainable relief effort will have to include a grassroots program for people to grow their own food or produce their own food, which is much more effective than sending them food by airplanes.
Now, one of the facts that I found interesting and puzzling was that 2/3 of the blind people in Africa are women.
It's very interesting. I don't know why there's such a gender imbalance, but that's the fact that it is. And you can imagine, in a matriarchal society like in Africa, the amount of issues that involves is much higher than in, you know, if there were the men involved.
What do you mean?
I think the women in Africa really are the linchpins of the families, and they, although they are still in a subservient relationship, if you look at any matriarchal society, they truly are the ones that run the household, that make financial decisions and educational decisions for their families. So if they're impaired because they're going blind, I think it has a huge impact.
Another thing things that are connected are blindness and mortality.
Absolutely. If you can't see, you can't use tools well, you can't walk through life avoiding the dangers and the pitfalls that would occur anywhere. And in a developing country, there are many fewer safety systems than we have here in the United States.
So the vast majority of the world's blind people are in developing countries. Many of those are in Africa. You were involved in this initiative. Tell us more about this Eyes of Africa initiative.
This is an amazing nationwide project where the maker of Botox has donated Botox, and one plastic surgeon from each state in the country is giving away Botox at a discount price to their patients. And all the money...
Now, that doesn't cure blindness.
No, but all the money that is raised in this is going to be donated to the Eyes of Africa project. So people who want to get Botox come in, pay a reduced fee, and everything that they give to each plastic surgeon across the country goes towards this Eyes of Africa initiative. And they've already raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the first community hospital in Tanzania is already half built, and so this funding is going to help do that. You know, I personally can't go over to Africa to help blindness, and the Santa Fe community people who live in Santa Fe can't go over there either. This is a way for this, you know, nice small concerned community to be involved in a global relief effort.
So when is the next fundraising effort? There's something happening in Santa Fe and Albuquerque?
There's something happening in Santa Fe on the 15th and in Albuquerque on the 14th.
Of November.
Of November, right, coming up real soon. And they should call my office. And the number in Santa Fe is 954-4900. And we'll schedule them. And I'll inject as many people as I can that day to raise as much money as I can. And
so
all of it is going to charity.
So basically, you're asking for vain ladies who want Botox to contribute, and their money will go to curing blindness.
You know, vanity is when you do something for someone else. And most people who get Botox or plastic surgery in general do it for themselves. And I don't consider that vanity. If you do something to make yourself feel better, that's not really vanity.
Well, Dr. Rennell, the number in your office, once again, is 954-4900. People can find out more about the Eyes of Africa Initiative. They can participate on the 14th in Albuquerque, the 15th in Santa Fe.
Correct.
And thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with Dr. Carol Luna Anderson about the Lifelink. Stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome Dr. Carol Luna Anderson. She's Executive Director of the Lifelink. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
What is Lifelink? Is it the institution formerly known as La Luz?
Well, actually, the Lifelink is the name of the nonprofit organization. And when we first opened, we had a homeless shelter for families, and we gave it its own identity of La Luz. So many, many homeless folks in the community and a lot of businesses still refer to us as La Luz. And at times, they get combined so that it's Lifelink La Luz.
Yeah. So you are a shelter. Is it people come for some period of time and then move on? How does it work?
No, it was originally. It was a shelter, which was very typical of emergency shelters in that we would allow individuals and primarily families to stay for, you know, a few months. And then we decided that part of the issues that individuals had and families had needed a lot more than just 2 or 3 months. And so we changed our focus to what we refer to as transitional or permanent housing. And it's supportive housing because individuals and families must be first homeless and then have a mental health issue or a combined mental health and substance issue. And we help them get their benefits. We help them get stabilized with whatever appropriate therapy would be best for them and then to really integrate back into the community. So it and I think the last statistics that I just finished actually shows that in all of our programs combined, folks stay probably about 2 years and 4 months.
What's the connection between mental health issues and homelessness?
What they statistically nationwide, what has been published is that they feel that there's anywhere between, depending on what part of the country you're in, they say that anywhere from 25% to 50% of adults have severe mental illness and who are homeless, and of that. Number, another 50% of those also have a substance use problem. But what we have found is that number is far greater. In our work here in Santa Fe, we have found that about 76% of homeless individuals have mental health issues of one nature or another.
So what does the cycle look like that leads to mental health issues and homelessness? I mean, does being homeless take such a toll on your psyche that people develop mental illnesses, or is it the other way around?
Well, I think it's more the other way around. What we do know is that anyone who has been homeless for 3 months, and primarily if we're talking about a single parent, either a mom or a dad, usually will become depressed. And if something isn't done to sort of intervene with that, that depression will continue until it gets almost to the point of where the person becomes incapacitated. They actually don't have emotional energy to begin the process of working out of the issues where they found themselves.
Others, not to mention caring for their children.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And what we've also found with individuals is that many times some mental illnesses actually have an onset in the teenage years, which is really sad. And then those individuals become alienated from the family or they just strike out on their own without ever being diagnosed and having any kind of intervention. And so those folks, you see a lot that have a lot of paranoia types of symptoms, or they don't integrate socially with others. So those are the ones that you see an awful lot of out in, and you know, who are on the corners and who are hiding in the arroyos around here. So we feel that many times the homelessness then is a product of a lot of the not being diagnosed, a lot of the issues of not being able to, in essence, fit in, as they say, within whatever the normal society's expectations of you are.
So do you go out and find those folks? Do they come and find you?
A combination. I have in our program right now, which has it is so expanded from the time we started, I have outreach specialist. And these are individuals who are their master's level therapist, actually. And they actually will go out into the parks where folks will, you know, gather on the weekends, or into different areas where we know that they are located, and they engage the individuals. Many are very distrustful, and a lot of it is because they haven't been treated very well. And so once you engage and you become acquainted with the person and build trust, and that can be just visiting with them for a few minutes. That can be, you know, giving them a sandwich. That can be, you know, seeing to it that they have some kind of a blanket or something. So, and then the outreach person will just continue to engage until there's enough of a trust that they then can bring the person in so that they can be part of, or at least have an opportunity to be evaluated.
So when you have somebody who comes in, for example, who started developing mental illness symptoms in their teenage years, and then they've lived on the street, and as you say, in arroyos and parks and so on for years, if not decades, can you turn that around? Do you want to turn it around? I mean, what is your role then look like?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on what the individual wants. We get confused at times by thinking that mental illness means that a person doesn't have an ability to make some decisions for themselves. Oftentimes, there is such a sense of hopelessness, or the symptoms have reached the place where they are not able to do a lot of problem solving for themselves. And so the intent is to get them into a safe place. It can be an emergency shelter. It can be, now what is the real focus within our nation is what we're referring to as housing first. And that is that they get into some kind of a housing program, whether or not they want treatment. And then the change begins to take place. Now, you can't take someone who actually has been on the streets for a very long time and expect that they're going to be a model renter. You know, they don't have the idea of, you know, how do you have pride in your place? How do you clean? How do you go about shopping? And so a lot of those life skills have to be incorporated along with that process of getting them to a place where they can make some good decisions for themselves.
That is also made more difficult by the problems of substance abuse, which you also see.
Yes.
What are the
yes.
substances that we're talking about?
Well, it varies across the country, actually. In the area where we're here, in Santa Fe, we see there's an awful lot, of course, marijuana or pot. We see a lot of cocaine. There is some heroin, but majority of what is the predominant substance is alcohol. And oftentimes it's combined with one of the others, or it is the substance of choice, maybe one of the drugs. And if the drug isn't available, then the fallback is alcohol.
Do you have an AA or some equivalent going on at the LifeLink?
Well, AA is actually a fellowship, which is a support program, which is, you know, it is not treatment. What it is a real support, and it makes a change in people's lives dramatically. And it gives them ongoing support while they maintain their sobriety. But our program is actually focusing in on the treatment. And so what we have done since 1995, is provide a treatment model that has been identified as a best practice because of the effectiveness of the treatment itself. And it's called the Community Reinforcement Approach, or CRA. And it actually is a treatment in which the person's whole life is taken into account, not just let's focus on, you know, you're using and let's stop using. So it's, okay, what kind of a life would you have if you weren't using? What changes could take place if, you know, you chose a life of not using? And so it is very much built on a reinforcement. So that, you know, it impacts families, because when change takes place, families are impacted. And we have been very pleased. The statistics of those that have done well in our program are very good. We also use an approach in which we take into account that many of these individuals are what we refer to as co-occurring, which they have both substance and mental health issues. And so we use a cognitive behavioral approach, which again is a best practice model and can be the same therapist provides both of the programs to the client, so that the client doesn't have to go all over town trying to get the treatment here and the treatment there, which is very frustrating, and oftentimes they won't.
We're talking to Dr. Carol Luna Anderson, Executive Director of the LifeLink. You have all sorts of degrees in counseling, in nursing. You have a doctorate. Yes. And there's also, if I understand correctly, a religious element in the way you approach things. I don't know if you take that into the work publicly or if it's just a private thing. How does that work for you?
Well, I think it's a combination of both, actually. When we first began the organization, it was a group of individuals that had a real faith. You know, wasn't necessarily, we all didn't go to the same church, but we all felt that, you know, there was part of our responsibility as being members of a faith program to do something for our community. And so I think that in some essence it's carried on. You know, in a world we believe that there is someone that can give us strength and that can help. We have lots of different faiths that make up my staff. We have different faiths that support us. To me, it has been a real grounding, and so that there's always that sense of hope. You know, things may not go well, and we certainly know that many of the individuals, we are not successful, if you want to define it as success, but we know that there, if you maintain that hope, that there is an opportunity, and we're just part of the change process, then I think that it helps. Gives you a lot of peace also. Yeah.
Without using any names or specific details, tell us some of the stories of some of your clients who really have succeeded.
Okay. I think I'll go back a little bit, and that is that when we first opened, we had a number of single moms. Many of them came from abusive situations where they had even fled from one part of the country to another. They would come in and have a real sense of desperation. In fact, that was the word that one used to me, because it was overwhelming. And what I found is that many of these young women came from broken homes themselves. They came from families that had abuse. They were not parented well, and so therefore they didn't know how to be a parent. And when you looked at the whole thing, it almost seemed overwhelming. But there was a real determination to do better. And so what we found is, with an opportunity, when you give people an opportunity and help them navigate through some of the systems that we have. So the first things were is to get them stabilized, and that is to get them into the housing, and then to begin to work on getting, you know, food stamps, getting any, now we call it TANF, you know, temporary assistance, for needy families, and then begin the process of, okay, what is it that she can do to really be self-sufficient? Does she need to go to school? Some have done that. Does she need to find some kind of work that could be incorporated so that child care could still be taken care of? And so I was, you know, you always have these wonderful things that happen. I was in a grocery store, and a young lady came up to me and asked if I had remembered her. And I did, actually, because she was a mom with two children. And she said when she left the shelter and gotten into her own place, because she was able to get some work and housing, and then she went back to school, and she now was a social worker. And said that her whole focus was to then give back to young women who were experiencing the things that she had experienced. And so that made me feel real good. We've had many individuals who have gone on to have good employment, be able to pay their own rent. And so those are nice stories.
You have a benefit coming up with, of all people, Patty Duke.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, this actually is our 20th year. We opened in September of 1987, and I wanted to have something that would really mark that. You know, 20 years is a special time. So what we did is we put together we wanted to have something that would focus on the issues that we have been addressing, mental illness, homelessness, substance use, really giving hope to individuals. And so I made contact with Patty Duke's agent, and lo and behold, I sent off a bunch of information, and she said she would be delighted to come. What makes it even more special is that just recently, within the last 6 months, Patty has been... she has been appointed, I guess is the term, or has now sits as a member of the advisory council for the Federal Center for Mental Health Services. And she has been a long advocate for individuals and for mental illness, anti-stigma, talking about the impacts and the overcoming and recovery, because she herself has bipolar disease.
So when is the benefit, and how can people find out more about it? It's Saturday night, isn't it? This coming Saturday?
Yes, it's this Saturday, which is the 10th, and it's going to be at the Lenzick Theater at 8 o'clock.
The Lenzick Theater in downtown Santa Fe,
downtown
West San Francisco.
Yes, and so anyone who's interested can get tickets by calling the box office number.
988-1234.
Thank you so much. and what we did is we gave an array of prices for the seats, because we really want people to participate. And so the seats are anywhere from $15 to $45. And if you are a senior or a student, then we take $10 off of that. So for those that are willing to sit in the balcony, you can have a whole evening of entertainment listening to Patty and also the music of the Soul Deacons for $5.
Well, Dr. Carol Luna Anderson, Executive Director of the LifeLink, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And I believe that you're on the web at thelifelink.org.
Yes.
We will see you on Saturday night at the Lenzick.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. And we want to send a special hello to all of our internet listeners out in radio land, out in computer land. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz with John Greenspan. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. Have a wonderful day. Ciao.
Stay tuned for the news next.